Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get it all. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safara here with you on this Monday morning. And we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Corey Curtis from News 2, brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic. Corey, good morning. How are you?
I'm off to a rough start. I just pulled the coffee cup away from the Keurig, and it wasn't finished.
Oh, boy. I did that last week. Did you get any on your hand? Because I about gave myself third-degree burns last week doing that.
Nope. I just pulled the cup out, and I used the handle. I didn't decide to stick my hand in the. I didn't stick my hand in the cup.
That's good. Well, we're sorry for your rough start to a Monday morning. Luckily, it's about to get better in a hurry.
It's a Monday.
Talking to us.
Okay.
Yeah.
About to get better in a hurry here. So, Corey, we finally made it to draft week.
And oh, is it?
I don't think that there's much suspense about what the Titans are doing at number one overall here. So my question for you is, your biggest burning question for the Titans, the thing you're most curious about on the draft front for the Titans as we get to the draft later this week?
Do they trade their second round pick and get more picks? That's my biggest question is, are they going to go 35 to 103 or are they going to get something else in there? Or are they going to make another deal involving other picks or players currently on the roster to get back in the draft and picks between 36 and 102.
We've thrown around the Jeff Simmons things. People have asked about that. You know, the possibility maybe there's a team out there that might be interested enough in him. If you were, first of all, do you think that that's possible in terms of another team? If you were the Titans, would you consider moving him, and what would you be looking for?
You know, that was we were talking about it yesterday in the office is that a real possibility? Is there enough demand for Jeffrey Simmons, can you get enough in return to make that trade? And then what is the return? You know, because we go, a second and a third. And I'm like, yeah, I think I'd run to the table and take that deal. And it's not because I don't like Jeffrey Simmons. It's because this team has to build for the future. And, you know, Jeffrey Simmons is entering year seven or eight?
I think so, yeah. I think seven.
Yeah. So, you know, how much would I need? I guess that's what I would know when it got presented to me. But I would need two picks. I know that. And I certainly one of them would probably have to be in the second round.
Corey, one of my biggest questions, I've been screaming about this for 3 years, of finding a young wide receiver to build around. Obviously, they had one and then traded him. So, did not work out so well. So, whether it's at 35 or if they trade back, they get to 42 or 40, whatever it is. Like, can they find one of those guys? Like, people have brought up Luther Burden. You know, there's a couple guys later in the second round that you may be able to find that are intriguing. But to me, that's a big part of this, that they either have to find this year or certainly next year. Like, you need that young wide receiver that is impactful immediately to go with Cam Ward. And I'm interested to see if they can find that now.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I kind of expect them to double dip at that position, to go possibly at two and then again at four or five, because I think there are going to be guys – I think there are going to be good football players on the board in round four, especially when they're picking at 103 if they still own that pick when it gets there. I think there's going to be players on the board that you cannot believe are still there. And that's because I think there's maybe not the high end, the numbers at the high end, I think, between 25 and 100, I think there's a lot that can be interchanged there. And so as a result of that, there's going to be players on the board, depending on the eye of the beholder, that you can't believe are going to be there. And I think, in round four, there's going to be receivers who could potentially be productive players, for the Titans. And I think they could, obviously we all know the two names we toss around at 35, and, that's Burden and Buka. And if one of those guys is there, you kind of run to the podium and take your pick. But, there are other guys who can be good players. And, we talk about A.J. Brown. He was a second-round pick. Antonio Brown was a fourth-round pick. There are good players taken outside of the first round all the time. And That's why you have a personnel staff, to find them. You know, this team hasn't done the best job in finding them the last 4 years, and that's why they're picking first.
You'd run to the podium for either of those guys as opposed to dropping back right there? Someone gives you a call and you can get back into the third, you'd run to the podium?
It would be hard not to. I mean, if I could still pick, like 40 and get like 60, 40 and you know, something like that, I'd be like, that would be tough. That would be tough to step away from. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. I mean, that part of it's really interesting. You know, the thing is, Corey, they need an impactful wide receiver, and they certainly need an impactful edge rusher. And can you get both? Like, is that possible in this draft to get both that can come in immediately and help you?
You know, look, you go into the rounds 4 and 5, you can get a guy like Kyle Kennard from South Carolina who had 11.5 sacks last year.
Yep.
You can get a guy like Tyler Barron who had 19 sacks in his college career, a guy from UT who went on to Miami and had like 6.5 sacks. I mean, Tyler Barron is like 6'5", 260 and ran a 4.63, 40. I mean, you know, he's an athlete. They're not perfect products, which is why they're projected later. But, like, you know, I mean, Kyle Kennard has 11.5 sacks in one season in the Southeastern Conference.
I really like him. I mean, good player. I don't think he's getting anywhere near enough buzz. Yeah.
Well, I mean, he didn't test well. And, you know, so that's taken down. I think there's also criticisms about his strength at the point of attack, you know, which, you know, I guess could be a set the edge question. But, guys, we know this. They need somebody who can hit the quarterback. And this guy has over 20 career sacks in college. You know, 11.5 in one season in the SEC. I mean, you got to look at guys like that. And when you can get them in round four, you've got 2 fourth-round picks. You know, I think you can say, you know, you can get a good football player there who can make an impact for you and play his rookie year.
So, Corey, I did want to get your thoughts, something that we've talked about today, and we've been talking about a lot, but now it's go time. We've had some. Mm-hmm. We've had new, very interesting public comments. As of Friday, you think Barry Trotz is firing Andrew Burnett or keeping him?
Well, you know, Barry's a coach, so I think you know the last person he's going to want to blame is the coach because he knows how that blame game goes. But if it's not the coach, it's the players, and if it's the players, then he's blaming himself because he's the one who put the team together. So I think that's an interesting kind of thought process there. And maybe Barry is second-guessing his decisions on how it all kind of came together. You know, we'll hear from him, you know, this week. You know, I'm not one who always runs to blame the coach, so if you didn't want to fire him, you know, I would say, okay, let's talk about, you know, where you think the mistakes, you know, were made then, you know, because ultimately this system, did it not score goals last year?
It did.
And then this year it magically did not score goals. And wasn't there like shooting percentage like historically low?
It was incredibly low. Incredibly low.
Okay. So does that fall on the coach or the players for their inability to finish scoring opportunities?
Yeah, it's a great question. Like the question that I would have that I think they've got to determine here, Corey, that's going to play a big role in this, like the shooting percentage is low. I think there's a lot about this season that will probably naturally correct itself just from, you know, getting back to the mean next year. How much do you rely on that? And how much do you look at it and say, all right, well, this system has been successful before, but maybe it's not successful with this makeup of players? Like, that's what I think they've got to figure out.
That's a good question. I think that's a good question. And I think that's a fair question. And I think it's very difficult to sell to players and fans bringing back the coach when you just finished with, what, the third worst record in the NHL? I mean, that is a tough sell, and you're asking for a buy-in from your players when your coach asked them to buy in last year and it didn't work. You know, I think it's tough because with the Titans, you can point to quarterback and say, yes, they were the worst team in the NFL last year, but with competent quarterback play, they probably win at least 6 or 7 games, and they're picking nowhere close to first. And with the Preds, you know, we can't point, like, to UC Soros and say, well, if it weren't for use, you know, they'd be, you know, 5 points out of the playoffs instead of 30. And so that's kind of a tougher diagnosis, you know, because, like, you know, you're talking about guys having career bad years and all of them doing it at the same time. I mean, you know, you got 21 goals from Marchessault and 25 goals from Stamkos. And I don't remember what, you know, Stamkos and Sisson's numbers were exactly a year ago, but I would say they were both considerably down. You looked for a step up from Luke Evangelista and you got a step down. You know, for all of those guys to stake a step down in 1 year is alarming. It's alarming. And is it just bad luck? Because, you know, a wise man once always told me that hope is not a strategy. And to hope guys play better next year is an awful big limb to go out on.
Well, and frankly, I think they've done that probably too much throughout the history of their franchise of, well, let's just hope that people have career years this year, and that's a tough thing to pull off.
Now you got almost a decade of hope as in regard to UC Soros coming up.
Well,
so
there is that as well. Corey, we apologize for your early morning coffee spill, but we hope that we at least took your mind off of it for the last 15 minutes. Thanks for being with us.
Well, I've rallied, and I'm ready to go now. And I want to thank you guys for watching our draft preview last night.
Yep.
You know, it was very nice of you. I know you stayed up because you were up like 3 hours later.
Sure.
I recorded it.
I want to remind everyone that everyone can watch the NFL draft on News 2 from
you can.
Start to finish, starting Thursday night at 7 o'clock.
Absolutely. We're very much looking forward to it. Corey Curtis, great stuff. The next time we talk to you, the draft will be complete. So we're looking forward to that next week. Thanks for being with us.
I wonder who they'll take number one. I'm on pins and needles.
Me too. Very, very curious. Corey Curtis, brought to you by Tennessee Men's Clinic, joins us every Monday morning at 8 o'clock here on the program. We'll react to what Corey had to say. Had a couple more of your thoughts to get into on the NFL draft. We will get back into the Predators conversation later this hour as well. Some eye-opening comments from Jonathan Marchessault, particularly over the weekend as well. We'll get into all that. Robbie and Rexrow, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Don't miss Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on the Game Nashville Sports Network, broadcasting live from Twin Peaks in Madison on Thursday and Friday from Boom Boss Pizza and Watch Bar in East Nashville. Coverage begins at 6 o'clock each day, presented by Hardee's, Parman Tractor and Equipment, Twin Peaks, Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, Shane Co., and Professional Home Improvements. We'll be on 102.5 The Game Thursday, Friday on Sports Talk 830. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrow. Appreciate Corey Curtis from News 2 for being with us in the last segment there. So he says, you know, if Burton and or Egbuka are available at 35 for the Titans, that he would have a tough time not just running up to the podium and saying, hey, here's our card. We're turning in the pick and we're going with one of those two guys. I probably would, too. Now, again, that becomes, okay, what's the offer to trade back? You know, if it's moving back to the low to mid-40s and you're picking up either another early third-round pick or, a mid-third-round pick, then I'd probably have some thinking to do on that front, Joe Rexrode. But specifically those two guys at wide receiver, an Egbuka or a Burden, if they're there at 35, I'd probably have a hard time passing.
Yeah, I like them. I like them both. So I get that for sure. You know, this is where, you know, all the work you've done as a team is what you lean on, you know. I mean, you may think there's not that big of a gap between those guys and the next couple of guys coming off the board at receiver, and you may think it's incredible that you have this opportunity to draft them. I mean, I'm still kind of lean toward get more picks again, based on the overall idea that, you know, Corey said to 100. Again, we've heard, you know, 15 to 75 is almost the same thing in this draft. I think that really means something. Ed, by the way, I can get to Ed now, says, are we all getting too concerned about getting another third or fourth round pick? Trading guys for picks below third is no guarantee. Is Tajay Spears, Malik Willis, Monty Rice, all third-round picks really helping the team? First of all, there's no guarantee in the first round either or second round, right? So I hear what you're saying, but do you like Kevin Byard because he was a third-round pick? Do you like Jonnu Smith because he was a third-round pick? I was looking for more recent examples. It's hard to find recent examples because, like, almost all the picks sucked in recent years. But, again,
well, look around the league. Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, the third and fourth round produce tremendous players all the time. And you need, you know, you can get starting level players if you draft well in those rounds.
Right. Like, you need your scouting department to find guys that can come in and be impactful players for you in later rounds. Like, obviously, the most important thing here is you hit on your first pick. Like, everybody knows that. If you hit on Cam Ward, then that's going to be the story of this draft, whether or not he's a success or a failure. So we know that heading into it. But, like, you know, go back to 2019. They had Jeffrey Simmons, but they also had A.J. Brown.
Well, Nate Davis Jr. was that third round, Nate Davis, by the way.
And he was good. He wasn't great, but he was good.
But you'll take a starter, a multi-year starter at guard who you didn't want to pay but was good enough to get paid by somebody else.
Right. Like, you know, Amani Hooker was in that group.
Fourth rounder.
Yeah, so they've done it before. Like, they've found later round players that have come in and have been successful. You need to – it's high time they have another good draft. Like, they've not really even had a good draft since 2019.
Right.
They've had some okay picks here or there. But they've not really had a good draft since 2019, which was a great draft. So that's, I mean, it's a long gap.
It's a long gap. And by the way, in that 2019, they also got David Long in the sixth round.
Yep.
So now again, that's, you know, that's an extreme example of that draft. You know, and also once you get again later rounds, now I'm more skeptical of the later rounds.
Yep.
But I think through the fourth and you hope the fifth, you can still. I mean, even in the 21 draft, bad draft, because obviously you take Caleb Farley 1, you take Dylan Radins 2, and then you take Monty Rice in the third round. It's like, oh, boy. But you also got Elijah Molden in the third round that year. And, I mean, Elijah Molden was banged up, but that's not a bad pick. And, by the way, the Chargers are happy that he's in the league.
Yeah.
He was good last year. Then you took Dez Fitzpatrick in the fourth round. You could have taken Amon-Ra St. Brown and others. That was a disaster. But Rashad Weaver's not a terrible pick either in the fourth round there. So,
but if you're picking at 35, like if you stick and pick at 35, if you're the Titans, you better be right. Because, I mean, that's a long time from pick 35 to 103 to just sit there with the needs that you've got on your roster. So, like, I would probably like to see them trade back and pick up more picks. However, if you feel like you've got a great player there at 35, I'm cool with them staying there. But you better get it right. Like, you better be, if you're picking and sticking and picking at 35, you better be pretty darn sure that guy's going to be an absolute stud player for you moving forward here.
Yeah. It's almost like, no doubt, they need to have a.
You just don't have the luxury to not be right about that with the rest of your roster the way it is right now.
I mean, I guess you could look at this draft and say, well, even if you're wrong on everything else, if you are right on Cam Ward, then. And eventually it'll pay off for you, right? But yeah, this, even if, I mean, Cam Ward, let's say Cam Ward is ready to have like a Jaden Daniel, CJ Stroud kind of rookie year, which I doubt, but I'm just saying if he is, like, those guys did have some good players around them.
Yep.
Like, how would you even have that with this roster?
Yeah, I mean, right now, go look at the, they don't
that, have that would be a magician
room.
Trick.
Yeah. Like, right now, their receiving room is Calvin Ridley. And a bunch of dudes. Like, that's what it is.
Treylon Burks.
No disrespect to Bryce Oliver. But, I mean, we spent entirely too much time this offseason talking about Bryce Oliver. That's where they're at in their receiving room right now.
Yeah. Someone also texted, you know, this, you know, we talk about, you know, tanking for quarterbacks. It's like, can the Titans tank for the next 2 years so that they can get Ryan Williams or Jeremiah Smith?
Yeah.
Those might be like the number one and number two picks in the 27 draft.
Yeah.
Is Jeremiah Smith and Ryan Williams.
I was talking with an Ohio State fan on Twitter probably last week, and I do wonder, like, if Jeremiah Smith was coming out in this year's draft, where would he go? I think it would be top five. Like, I think he'd be a top five pick.
Oh, I have no doubt at all.
Yeah.
I think either of those guys would be.
You're talking about a 19-year-old.
No, it's insane. Diarrhea for Jeremiah? No, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Give me something for Jeremiah.
By the way, since Nico's gone now, are we retiring Walk Through Lava for Iamaliava? Or does that live on?
Well, I mean, if he plays well at some point, then if he's going to be a high you know, drafted QB. When, you know, Cam Warren flames out after year one. Everybody, oh, nope, this didn't work. You might still need to walk through lava for Yamaliava.
Yamaliava.
Dang it. Why do I have regressed?
You have. You have. But I'm sure that how many drummed up stories do we think we're going to get from now until the first round of the draft about Titans have not totally closed the door on a trade between now and Thursday? I'm looking forward to those.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. I'm going to be mad at whichever reporters come with that. you need to.
There's still time.
Yeah, again, like technically, I mean, if I'm the Titans, I'd be like, well, look, technically, I mean, look, someone could offer the world to us, sure, but it just hasn't happened. So until we make the pick, we haven't made the pick, right? But yeah, we don't need,
I think
a,
we're a,
lot. We don't
need
a lot of that.
I think we're a little late in the game at this point. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll get back into the Titans throughout the week. Obviously, we have we've arrived to NFL draft week, thankfully. So that's coming up on Thursday. By the way, looking forward to having Charles Robinson on the day of the draft, coming up on Thursday as well at 8 o'clock, so make sure you're tuned in for that. Always some good stuff on draft day with Charles every year, and we were very fortunate to have him on the day of the draft this week as well. We'll get into the Predators coming up next. Some eye-opening comments from Jonathan Marchessault over the weekend. We'll revisit those. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Robbie and Rex Road brought to you by First Horizon, Big Bank Muscle, Small Bank Hustle. Visit firsthorizon.com/get-it-all. Live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. Over the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Big week on the NFL draft front this week, and also a big week for the Nashville Predators. The future up in the air at the moment for Predators head coach Andrew Brunette. We're going to get to some of his comments a little bit later here in the program. But let's start with the Predators' end-of-season press conferences on Friday. The players spoke first, then Andrew Brunette spoke. We are scheduled to hear from Barry Trotz at some point this week, so we'll see exactly when that happens. But Jonathan Marchessault making some waves over the weekend with one of the questions I had for him. I basically asked him, hey, like the style of play, what do you think about it, and do you think it needs to change with this group as they move forward here? And here is what Jonathan Marchessault had to say on Friday.
Is there anything specifically with the way you guys play, the style of play, that you would like to see adjusted heading into next year?
Yeah, clearly it didn't work.
Right.
So obviously there's going to be some adjustment to do. I'm a guy that has a lot of opinions, so I don't think I'm going to render them out right now. But yeah, there's definitely adjustment. I think one of the things that we adjusted this year that I think was good is in our D zone, sometimes we had our winger a lot on the boards, and now they were more towards the middle, so we kept a lot of things towards the outside, and I think our D zone got better with that. That's one of the things that we did better this year, I think, from the beginning to the middle. So, obviously there's adjustment that needs to be done, and to be honest, my mindset is every team in NHL should take a page of the books of the best teams in the NHL. I think they're the reason why they're there. Yes, they have sometimes they're at the cap. I think that's something that's super important to be competitive. I think some of the teams that are the best, they do something really good to be there, and I think everybody needs to take a little bit of page of the good teams in the league. That's why playoff hockey is the best hockey, because that's why you look at the teams, you like see how they play their game, their system, how they adjust certain situations, you know, like, because I've had a lot of different coaches, and probably one of the best coaches I ever had was Bruce, and one thing, like me and him, we definitely headbutt each other, but he adjusts. He adjusts every game, and he's an unbelievable hockey mind, and there's a reason why they're so good. Obviously, they have the tools over there, but he's a guy that thinks the game super well, and that's something that I really enjoyed from him.
So Marchessault says, clearly what we did didn't work, and I've got a lot of opinions that I'm not going to throw out there right now. And then he threw out some opinions about what they are missing at the moment. It was interesting. Like, there's a lot to sift through there. He's talking about how
you know, if you're a team in the league and you're not in the playoffs, you need to start following the book of like what other teams do. What sort of systems do they run? What sort of way are they trying to play out there? He talked about how spending the cap is a really important thing, which, I mean, the Predators spent a lot of money last offseason, so we'll see what they do this offseason. He talked about how, you know, Bruce Cassidy came up just basically out of nowhere. Like, he brought up his old coach in Vegas, and the one thing he kept saying was, you know, yeah, we butted heads, we didn't always get along, but, man, that guy adjusted. He adjusted on a nightly basis, and he didn't come out and say, like, some waving sign that Andrew Brunette's not a good coach, but I would not exactly call that a ringing endorsement of Andrew Brunette that Jonathan Marchessault gave there.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're Andrew Brunette and you're hearing that, yeah, I mean, how could you not take that at least as a little bit of a subtweet, you know, comparing this the previous coach to him, you know, and talking about – because the adjustment has obviously been so much of the conversation all year. So, like I said earlier, you know, if Marchessault – it's clear that Marchessault is sort of the, I guess, the center of the conflict here, right? He didn't have a good year. He was outspoken at times about it. It seems that there's some people who aren't big fans of his or aren't big fans of some things he's done / said.
Yeah.
So what I'd like to know is, you know, like, have Marchessault and Brunette had it out to the point of, like, they, you know, they've said their piece. He said his piece to him directly and frankly. You know, or is he saving it for things like this?
Right.
You know, that's a big deal. And of course, I'd love to know what Marchessault told or will tell. I mean, the player interview's got to be done.
I think
right? They've
met. So,
you know, told Barry Trotz about him too.
Yeah. Is there anything the players could have said to Trotz at this point to sway his mind?
I think that may be a large part of what this comes down to. Like, I think, you know, I said it heading into this. And I heard Elliot Friedman talking about this too. Like, I think the exit meetings and what those players said and discussed with Barry Trotz is going to go a long way in this. Like, I don't know how it couldn't, just based on the way your team's structured right now. Like, could you move on from Marchessault after 1 year? Maybe. Like, there may be somebody out there that could trade. But, like, Stamkos is 35 years old, had a down year. First off, he got trade protection. I don't think he wants to go anywhere right now. So, like, he's going to be back. And Shea's going to be back. And Yossi's going to be – like, all these guys are going to be back. So you got to find a way to figure it out if you're them. So I think that's a large part of what it could come down to. Now, we heard from Marchessault there, and he answered it. And it's like, look, the one thing I say from Marchessault, I brought it up last week, I don't think that, you know, he's always the most popular guy all the time with some people in the organization. The one thing I'll say, like, he's pretty direct. Like, he says what's on his mind, which I kind of like. I think you need some of that in your organization. So – I like that part of it. Now, I asked Steven Stamkos the same thing, same question about adjustments and style of play and all that. And here is what Steven Stamkos had to say on Friday, a pretty different answer.
Steven, talking to Marchessault about the style of play, he said, you know, clearly it didn't work, so you're going to have to make some adjustments there. Do you have thoughts on what you think needs to change from a style of play standpoint?
Yeah, it's tough, you know, when you lose and when you're not having success, everything sucks, right?
Right.
You know, you find things to complain about. You find things to be negative about. It's any aspect of life, right? Things are going well, you know. Yeah, the food might have not been great last night, but I had a great time at dinner because today was a great day. When things aren't going well, everything sucks. You find ways to complain about things. That's human nature, and that's what, you know, crept into a lot of us this year was those negative thoughts. So when you're talking about systems, I mean, was it new for a lot of us? Absolutely. Is there things that can be tweaked, I think, to help out the group that we have now? That's the challenge. Is every year there's different players on teams that, you know, you have to try to figure out what works, you have to see what works, what doesn't work, and then kind of evolve around that. So that takes some time, that takes some thought. So I think, you know, is there one thing that's glaring that needs to be changed? I'm not sure if there is, but there certainly can be tweaks, and that's why you have those relationships with the leadership group and the coaches, and you try to feel out that process and you know, but sometimes you need to see it before, whether it works, whether it doesn't work. And, you know, this year obviously was a tough year, so I'm sure things will be talked about behind the scenes.
So a couple of different answers there from Stamkos and Marchessault. Now, one thing that reading between the lines I think you could take away from both of them is, I don't think they always felt like the adjustments were there for their group. Like, one thing Stamkos said in the middle of that there was, you know, taking a look at the group we have now. And I thought that kind of stood out of the group we have now. Is this exactly the right fit, the way we're doing things? Or could you make some adjustments on that front? But two pretty different answers there from Stamkos and Marchessault.
Yeah, and it kind of matches up with, I mean, I think kind of really how it's gone this year for them both and how they've decided to address things. I don't know if it necessarily means there's a huge difference in opinion, but it's certainly a difference in messaging. You know, if Barry Trotz decides that he is keeping Andrew Brunette, does he need to try to move Marchessault and take pennies on the dollar? I mean, I don't even know what is possible there, but is it to that extent or no?
I don't know if it's to that extent in terms of, like, it's an untenable situation. I don't know that it's that. What I do think would be fair to wonder is, like, does Barry Trotz look at the way it was on the ice this year and think to themselves, well, it's not a good mix in terms of the way you're – not only the way you're trying to play, but the fits out there. Like, do you really need Forsberg, Stamkos, and Marchessault? Like, that's a lot of the same – you know, not that they're exactly the same type of players, but you've got your scoring wingers. Like, that's – and they're all right-handed shots. Like, do you need that? And, you know, look, I heard DVD talking about this, and Elliot Friedman's brought this up. Like, Ray Ferraro in the preseason last year was just like, they got three guys that are right-hand shots. This is not going to work. And it didn't work. So, like, do you look at it stylistically and say, all right, well, we need to bring somebody else in here who's either a centerman or is a left-handed shot that you could try to do different things with the way you attack in the offensive zone? So maybe from that standpoint, yeah, you could try to move him. I don't know that it's to the point where it's like, we got to get this guy out of here. Like I said, I think the direct nature that Marchessault approaches his work with sometimes can rub people the wrong way. I don't think that's always a bad thing. Like, I think if you're a good organization, you can handle some of that, and we'll see if they can handle it.
Yeah. Also, you know, it helps if you play well.
Exactly.
You
know, well, that's the main thing. You know, like they all
are you an asset on the ice?
Right. Look, system fit or not, like we can talk about system, and maybe the right thing here is to move on from Andrew Brunette and bring in somebody else that's a quote-unquote better fit. Regardless of who your coach is, though, next year, like, it's on them to a certain degree to play better than they played this year. They all did not play well anywhere near consistently enough this year, regardless of the system.
After all this, I think I'm less convinced that Brunette's coming back.
I am. Yeah. I said it. I walked into that building on Friday. I don't know if convinced is the right word, but believing that Andrew Brunette was probably coming back as the head coach. And I walked out of there way less sure about that on Friday afternoon. Because, again, you know, Marchessault and Stamkos saying this stuff to us in the media, what are they saying to Barry Trotz behind closed doors, and how much is that going to factor into the decision that Barry Trotz makes? That's a big part of this. Well, I'll take more thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025. We'll hear from Andrew Brunette and what he had to say on Friday as well. Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Rowe, 1025-1063, The Game.
Yeah, I'm here to coach. You know, love my job, love my team, until I'm told otherwise. I'm going to continue to work and become a better coach, and I think I'm an extremely competitive person. Sometimes it doesn't always come out that way, but, you know, and I think our group is an extremely competitive group, and we're not where we want to be. It was not from a lack of care or work. It just didn't happen. And myself and my staff, you know, we're going to go back to work, and I think we're going to take a breath. We're going to analyze, find out what we can do better, where we can do better, what went wrong. Don't have all the answers right now. I think for me, just clear my head a little bit, but I'm looking forward to finding solutions. You know, like I said, I play a long time, and my path wasn't the easiest path. And what I loved about the game probably the most was finding ways. And this is a great challenge. and I can't wait to start. And if I'm told otherwise, I feel very confident in my ability to continue that pass.
That's Andrew Burnett on Friday discussing his job status, which at the moment, Joe, is up in the air. We're supposed to hear from Barry Trotz later this week. I got a feeling it'll probably be somewhere in the midweek, so maybe Wednesday, Thursday, somewhere in that area. So we'll see what that looks like exactly from Barry Trotz. And again, if there's a decision that's been made by that point, I would hope, and as you brought this up earlier, I would hope that by the time the press conference comes around that he's decided whether or not Andrew Burnett's going to be the coach. Like, I don't really want to get up there and hear, well, we're still evaluating, and we'll have a decision here in a couple weeks. If you're Barry Trotz,
I'm calling for a media walkout if that happens. I'm calling for a media. All due respect, yeah, Barry, appreciate you, man. Let us know when you know something, and we'll come back and talk about everything.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
we'll see what happens on that front later this week. I will. I said this earlier, and I think it's important. Like I do think we've heard from some Predators fans that have said, well, Burnett's coming back, and Barry Trotz has already made that decision. I do not have that vibe right now. Like, based on what the players have said, and frankly, based on Andrew Burnett, like Andrew Burnett seemed to know, and part of that answer was that, but really throughout his entire press conference Friday, like I think he knows that his future right now is totally up in the air. So I don't think that Barry Trotz has like made some decision yet that he and Andrew Burnett have been talking about for weeks that he's coming back. Now, did Barry Trotz probably, was he leaning one way or the other coming into this process? Probably. I mean, I think it'd be surprising to me if he wasn't. But how does what he's uncovered when he's talked with his players and with Andrew Burnett at the end of the year, how does that influence what he does here?
So if he does fire him, excuse me, if he does fire him, you believe then that the exit interviews probably tilted it the other way?
Well, I don't know if I would say it tilted it the other way. I would say the exit interviews are going to play a huge part in this. If he came in leaning towards bringing Andrew Burnett back, I do think the exit interviews could turn it the other way. I don't know that he's leaning that way, though. Like he may be coming in leaning that he was going to move on, and the exit interviews just confirmed it. That could be the way that he's leaning. I could just tell you the sense I got based on some comments that Trotz had heading into this weekend was that it kind of felt like he was coming back.
Yeah.
But I don't know that.
Yeah. I mean, adding up all the public comments from Barry Trotz, it wasn't – I mean, he would always argue. You know, Jared did a good job of asking him straight up, and he's like, no, you should not assume that, right? He's always been careful to not – you know, to make – clear that it's not a foregone conclusion, but I still would say all of the comments added together still sound like a GM was bringing his coach back.
Right. And then that gets into, well, number one, what's the reaction going to be if he's back? Because if he's back, like at the very least, if Andrew Burnett is back, clearly based on the comments that the players have made, they got to do some major league tinkering here. Like, and I think that's both from a roster standpoint and from the way they try to play. So I guess then the question becomes, if you're Barry Trotz and you're analyzing, let's say that's a baseline of reality, if they got to change the way they operate here. Well, are you better off trying to change the way you operate with the coach you already have, or are you better off bringing in somebody who just naturally does something different? That's what I don't know. That's what you'd have to determine if you're Barry Trotz. But on the surface, Joe, I've got a hard time imagining you get through the end of this and saying, well, we need to totally change the way we play, and then you just leaving the coach the same. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
If you believe that, you have to make the move. Raymond on the text line says, how many more coaches Barry Trotz get to turn this around? He put together this roster with the right-handed shooters. He needs to own some of the blame. Yeah, I mean, it's going to – plenty of sentiments in that direction lately, and that's all fair for sure on Barry Trotz. Right now, the first – order of business is the coach, and that's always the first order of business in the NHL. And it's often a very quick order of business.
Well, and again, like some other things that I read into from the players about what the plan is this offseason is really interesting. Because, you know, Barry Trotz has gone on with Stillman, and he's talked about it in his press conference settings of the plan is the plan. And, you know, the plan is in pen and the path is in pencil and how you get there. And it's like, well, the more he talks about the plan, the more it makes it seem like it's always been like the younger guys coming up and waiting on the, you know, the Matthew Woods and the Tanner Molendykes and the Joakim Kimmels of the world and those guys, and then, you know, whatever the draft pick is going to be this summer. And I'm sure that's a big part of it. But, like, if I'm the veteran players, it's like, well, that's all great. What about winning right now? And from what Stamkos said, like, Barry Trotz has laid out what he wants to do this offseason. The players seem to be on board with it based on what they've said. So I can't imagine that Barry Trotz has sold them on, hey, we're going to have a lot of young guys in the lineup next year. Like, we're going to have a lot of young guys, and it could be rough. I don't think he said that to the players because no way. I don't think the players would be very receptive to that.
No, and it doesn't make any sense. That's not what you're doing. You're trying to win. You tried to win this year. You're trying to win next year. You just gave an 8-year deal to a 30-year-old goalie.
Yeah.
Like, the time is now. It's just, that's why this season is such a disaster, because the time was this year to win and not just make the playoffs but be a factor in the playoffs. And instead, this happened.
Right.
But that doesn't mean you can't. Like, there's no rebuild plan. You can't even execute that plan unless you just seriously want high-priced guys just aimlessly skating around for no reason.
Yeah. I mean,
you have to try to win.
I agree. And then the question becomes, how do you do that? You know, Stamkos talked about, you know, Barry Trotz to them behind closed doors, laying out his plan for free agency, laying out his plan on the trade market. It's a clear, look, I think they're going to try to pull off some trades this offseason. They got a lot of draft capital. They got a lot of assets. They have some cap space. So you're going to see them, if not pull one off that's pretty big, I think you're going to hear them in and around some rumors this offseason as it relates to a trade. Can they pull anything off, and what decision do they make with the coaching staff in the meantime?
And if they don't have a winning team that makes the playoffs and is a factor, then because Barry Trotz is going to need to pull off some stuff here to make it happen, and they're going to need a lot of guys to play better. But if not, then yeah, a year from now, there's a lot more talk about Barry Trotz.
There is no doubt about that. That's going to do it for us today here on the program. We'll be back 6 a.m. tomorrow. Chase and Big Joe coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 The Game.